the guys from Ping, they've kind of shown me how much the equipment matters.
I just love that I can hit any shot I kind of want.
We're going to be able to tell some fun stories about what goes on here to help golfers play better golf.
Welcome back to the Ping Proving Grounds podcast. I'm Shane Bacon. That's Marty Jernsen. Marty, how we doing? Today we're going to talk a little putting. I'm struggling with my putting. I can't make anything right now. I need the advice from our guest.
Yeah, there's a lot to putting. I think Sasha's been, Dr. Sasha McKenzie has helped us in a number of ways as an engineering brand ambassador for us. But he's been going deep on putting. How do you make more putts? How do you miss less putts? And what is the causal reason? I think that's where we want to dive really deep with Sasha today, of why you miss putts, and then tie it together to putter fitting, Shane, because that's kind of the, you know, we want to kind of tie all these different pieces together.
Sasha, I'm not making a lot of putts. What am I doing wrong? I mean, without looking at me, without seeing my stroke, without seeing the way I'm hitting it, what am I most likely doing wrong to where I'm, to Marty's point, either missing more putts or not making as many as I'd like?
Yeah, number one reason is probably green reading. So that's a massive chunk. At least 50% of missed putts are due to green reading errors. Let's assume we're talking about makeable putts, you know, like 12 feet and in kind of thing. Then it's probably your speed control. If you improve that, you're going to sink some more putts. Then probably face angle control. So face angle variability, speed, club head speed variability, putter head speed variability. And then it's a steep drop off to things like where the ball is hitting on the face, and path. But those top three, green reading is the biggest, then speed control, and then face angle variability.
Sasha, how do you practice green reading? I mean, obviously we've got green reading books and things like that, but how does someone go out and actually work on that part of the game? Because it makes sense to someone like me to work on path and to work on speed and things like that. But to go out and actually perfect my ability to read a green seems relatively daunting for me.
Yeah. Well, the number one thing that most people can do that they're not doing is, and this is what, when I work with players, especially mini tour players or really good college kids, I ask them, how many different putts do you see in your putting session? So you practice your putting for an hour. How many different putts are you hitting? Like different starting positions to different holes. A lot of them don't really know the answer, but a lot of times it's like, well, six, you know? So the more experience you can have hitting different putts, so you have to actually assess what are you going to do and then consciously thinking about what happened. That's a big thing, is that most people do not know if they've misread the putt or if they've mis-executed on the putt. So then there's no learning. So you need to see a lot of different putts, and especially putts where your ability to read the green matters and you can discern it based on the outcome. So 40 footers, not so much, but you know, if we're down inside 20 feet, and definitely if you're missing putts, you know, 8 to 12 feet, you should be able to say, did I execute as intended? If you did, then it's a misread. And then you can learn. You can start to learn, okay, I'm under reading the speed. You know, I'm bad at judging whether the putt is uphill or downhill, because I hit this putt as hard as I wanted to, and I thought, this is going to be close. And you're like, whoa, you know, that's still rolling, right? That was a misread.
Sasha, this is very anecdotal, but I think we can have Shane chime in on this, because he was a caddy at St. Andrews, done a lot of caddying in his career. I feel like I was the best at green reading when I was a four caddy. I was a four caddy at Castle Pines in college, and I would just watch a ton of putts. I'd have to debate, Shane, you know how this goes, like, should I tell the player where to actually hit it, or hedge him on under reading it for him? But I just was maximizing the learning, I think, Sasha. Shane, what are your thoughts on that from your experience caddying?
Yeah, well, I mean, Sasha made a great point about the lengthy putts. I mean, caddying at St. Andrews, you know, you'd have a guy have an 80-footer. I mean, I'm not going to give you a whole lot of help in terms of speed. I could maybe give you a line. But yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Marty, in terms of being on the back for someone and watching a whole lot of different point putts. I mean, Sasha bringing up the idea of a great player saying, I hit six putts on the practice screen in a half hour. And then you think about going out on the golf course in real time and how many putts you might face in a round of golf. I mean, there's a chance you might face 18 different putts, right? I mean, there are a whole lot of different ones out there. But Marty, I think you're spot on in the idea of when you're watching someone else do it, it feels like you learn a lot more than when you're actually doing it yourself.
Yeah, Sasha, I think you also brought up something interesting there, which is that path is not too big of a factor to necessarily practice. So what are those kind of like ball flight laws of a putt? And why is it exactly that a golfer should be focusing way more on minimizing their face variability than their path variability?
Right. So what I look at is you want to know from just a straight up physics standpoint, okay, let's say we're hitting a 12-foot putt. Just pick a putt, straight, flat, 12-foot putt to pick one so we can, you know, set up some boundaries here, some understanding. Well, you have to have your face angle be your path be plus or minus 3.5 degrees to miss that 12-footer in order to pull the ball far enough off your intended start line. So you have to take the physics and then say, okay, well, what is a golfer's variability in path? Mm-hmm. You need to look at both. So, okay, is this something that if I improve, it will make a difference? The worst putters that come through my lab do not have path variabilities that get plus or minus 3.5. Tour players are within plus or minus 1. So grinding on nailing your path, improving your path, is not going to move the needle in sinking more putts. So I look at, just since you brought up path, but there are really 4 things that are predominantly under the control of the golfer. You've got path variability, face angle variability, impact spot variability in the face, so whether you're hitting it off the toe, the heel, out of the center, high or low, and speed variability. And so you look at, okay, well, how far, let's take impact spot variability, out of this, away from the center of the face do I need to be before I miss that 12-foot putt? And it is like plus or minus 0.5 inch, okay, before you're going to start to miss a 12-inch putt. And then you say, well, where am I at? How many, if I hit 100 12-foot putts, how many of those impact spots are going to be outside plus or minus 0.5 inch? And the answer is 0, right? Your directional miss is going to be 2% of putt length for every 1 centimeter outside the impact spot. So, you know, 12-foot putt, 144 inches, you go, what's 2% of that? That, you know, if you go to the extreme of how terribly you can miss a putt on the putter face, it's accounting for virtually nothing left or right of the hole. And it's only 1% of rollout distance. So 144 inches, well, 1% of that, I mean, the impact spot variability gets completely washed out by face angle variability and putter head speed variability. So that's when I say, what should a person work on? Green reading is really important, seeing as many putts as you possibly can with different slopes and breaks and quantifying whether you misread it. But then that same type of practice will benefit your speed control, right? Yeah. You want to hone in your speed control. Okay, let's hit a downhill putt that's, you know, left to right. Now we're going uphill from 15 feet. Now we're going sidehill. You start to, that's the best way to get a better sense of your speed control is to hit lots of different putts to see it, you know, can you judge those speeds? Don't do drills that are going to work to reduce your variability in path or reduce your variability impact spot. There's just not going to be any gains to be had from improving those things.
Sasha, how did you get into this world? I mean, listening to you talk has already opened up my brain a bit. I mean, the fact that you're telling me I can hit a bad putt and still make it if I've read the putt correctly makes me, the weight is lifted off my shoulders. Hearing you talk about putting is amazing already. How did you get into this world?
I think I'm really drawn to it for 2 reasons. One, there's not a putt out there in any green that any golfer can't sink. There are a million different shots that only the best players in the world can hit. You know, yeah. You're going to try to carry a bunker at 320. Well, that's eliminated just about everybody on the planet. But everybody has the ability to sink every putt. So that's very attractive to me from like, hey, like, let's see if we can optimize. The other thing is that it seems like there is a ton of room for improvement. So if you took someone who's not into golf and you watch them, you said, let's watch Scottie Scheffler here hit this drive, you know, at Hero World Challenge. And you said, are you impressed by that? Everybody like, holy smokes. Like they'd be so impressed by how far the ball goes. And then if you took him on a putting green and you said, okay, here's an 8-foot putt. What percentage of these do you think Scottie Scheffler is sinking? And they'd say, oh, I don't know. I just watched like I hit it probably like 99%. Like, you know, this hole is like barely any distance away. And you're like, well, he'd be doing good to make half of his putts from here. So it's like, what, you know? And if you go into a lab situation, you can get players sinking nearly 100% of those 8-footers. So there's a massive you know, there's a massive potential there, I think, to improve on the putting green. And maybe I'm being a bit naive, but I think that someone could come along and separate themselves with putting to the same degree that, say, Bryson did a few years ago with driving, or Rory's, you know, kind of does with driving. But, we haven't quite seen that with putting on a consistent basis. So those are the two reasons, is that it seems like there's a lot of potential and everybody can do it.
Marty, it's so interesting to think about. I've never thought about that before, where, you know, if you and I go to the Masters and we go stand where Bubba hit the shot on 10, I mean, there's seven people on the planet that are going to hit a pull, you know, a pull hook gap wedge to 25 feet. But if you go stand on the back of the 18th at Torrey, in theory, to Sasha's point, everybody can make the putt raw, mate. I mean, you know, you get it on the right line with the right speed, it's going to go in. I mean, I've never thought about that before.
Yeah, it is fun to think about. And I like that Sasha, what he brings to us is an engineering ambassador, is this first principles thinking, right? It's just like some of the concepts are obvious in hindsight. Sasha, now that we've established the importance of face angle and delivered face angle, let's talk about how we can affect that with the putter, right?
Sure.
And I think a big thing, our founder and a ping we've always known is that, hey, you know, if you have more arc in your stroke, you generally do better with a more toe down putter, less arc, more face balance putter. Can you dive into a little bit of why that is and the kinetics and kinematics, that connection, and expand upon that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there's two ways you can measure or what you can look at in terms of an outcome of what the putter's doing to decide whether a putter's going to be a better fit for you. You've got reducing the variability, so being more consistent with it, and that's, I think, predominantly when we're fitting for stroke type. That's what we're trying to do. So this is a little bit theoretical. This is kind of getting a bit into my opinion, but I still think it's a pretty cool way to think of it. You have folks that tend to putt a little bit more straight back, straight through, and they tend to putt better with a face balanced style putter, where, you know, if you balance on your finger, the face is pointing to the sky. These putters inherently give very little feedback if you rotate them in your hands, because the center of mass is very close to the shaft. And I think there are a lot of folks who don't want to feel the face opening and closing or get any sensation of that. They set up an address and they think, okay, I've got this putter face pointing where I want. I want to make my stroke. I just want to know that if I don't do anything, the putter doesn't do anything, this thing's going to be delivered square. And those folks tend to do better with a face balance putter. Then you have people who inherently like to feel the face opening, closing. They want to feel that mass moving around. So they have some natural arcs, natural opening and closing of the face. And you can enhance that feel with a putter that is toe hang. So, and that's where you'll see if you go through like the putting studies I've done in my lab, and, you know, that happened at Ping for a number of years, those putters that like to have some arc in their stroke or tend to have some arc in the stroke, they like a little more feel, they do better with a toe hang. Face balance better for the straight back, straight through. So that's one way to look at it. But then I think some really low-hanging fruit is addressing biases.
Yeah.
So a lot of people don't realize, but as you go through the course of a round of golf or a practice session, you might miss 65% of your putts to the right. And that's enough to make a difference. You want to be 50-50, right? You want to be have that middle of the bell curve of your misses be centered on the hole. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if it's 65-35, that's not enough for us to remember, right? Yeah. As we go, we're focusing on other things. It's tough to mentally, if you miss 100%, yeah, you're like, okay, I've missed every putt to the right, but it's tough to track. So those systematic biases can kind of go unnoticed, but hopefully you've done something where you pick up on that, right? Hey, I'm a right-handed putter. I'm missing everything out to the right. So we've done some really neat studies showing that you can address those biases with your putter type. And it seems like, well, we know that toe hang putters, so putters that have the center mass off the shaft, right? You're going to tend to leave the face a little bit more open at impact. And that goes right across the board for pretty much everybody. So if you tend to pull your putts, you're missing putts to the left, hey, let's move you into a toe hang. We can address that bias. Your stroke feels good. you don't want to start changing your stroke. Hey, let's just go to a toe hang putter. Similarly, if you tend to be missing your putts the other way, you tend to be pulling your putts, go to a toe hang putter. That's going to tend to leave the face a little bit more open. I think I've said those correctly.
So, Sasha, just to wrap a bow on these two concepts here, one would be, and we've seen this with iPing, we have our consistency score that incentivizes being more repeatable, and we can measure, do A-B testing with different putters. We've seen it time and time again, like you said, if a player wants to feel less resistance or the putter kind of feeling like it's going to stay more square through the stroke, they have generally a higher repeatability score. We can measure that. We can improve Yes. their repeatability. That's number one, trying to match the balance of the putter to the what they're kind of innately like the feel of. And then number two, we can adjust the delivered face angle, which will affect the face delivery. And because we know face angle is the primary thing we want to influence there, we can eliminate a pull by playing a more toe down putter, eliminate pushes, reduce pushes by playing a more face balanced putter.
You got it.
And why is that? Why is it that the face is delivered more open if you play a more toe-down putter?
Yeah, and this comes down to the kinetics, so the forces and torques that the golfer is applying to the club. So I'll try my best to do this on a podcast. But there is a natural tendency, if you have the center of mass off the shaft, when you start your stroke, you're applying a force on the grip away from the target. That's actually going to tend to close the face. So if you're toe hang, the face is going to start to close more in the backstroke than the face balanced. And then what's interesting is then from there on, it's going to be lagging the face balanced, and it's going to get even more exaggerated. So as you transition into your forward stroke, now you're applying a force towards the target, and that starts to swing the putter more open. So the toe hang putter is going to start to open up more than the face balance, okay? And so now it's lagging in this open position. What's very interesting is that that's going to be maintained all the way up to impact, so that it never catches up to the face balance. It's actually going to remain more open.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is that the rate that it's closing, and so I don't know whether this is like a subconscious thing where folks realize, woo, they're not perceiving it, but they're trying to close it faster, or if it's just a reaction that, they're not even controlling themselves, but the rate of face clothing is faster at impact with the toe hang. So it's open, but it's trying to catch up. So that's the cause for that face to be a little bit more open with the toe hang putter. And it's important to point out that that's not a bad thing. You might actually overclose with the face balance.
Yeah.
So you need that little bit of open bias.
Sasha, how important is it for people to maybe give multiple putters a try? Obviously going through fitting is important and using iPing, but to get those feels that you're talking about, to kind of see throughout the options that maybe Ping has available, to see maybe what you're describing on the pod.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, Ping does an awesome job with the putter fitting. It pushes you very strongly in a direction, but when it comes right down to it, you do really want to try a couple of putters, Yeah, I firmly believe in that. So there's always going to be someone who, if you're not comfortable with it, it's probably not going to work in the long term. It's tough to really start to love a putter over time if you don't like it, within the first few days. So I think that especially if you have, you're like, I could use either of these. Hey, great reason to go with the fitting. And the fitting is certainly going to give you an excellent head start. But I think testing out one or the other is, or both is obviously the best way to go.
Sasha, we've had fun doing studies in our lab, and then you duplicate them in your lab, and we don't share results until we both kind of completed them. And that's kind of like two-factor confirmation on our findings. One of them we did was on putter offset. I know that's something, a lot of the golf world and, folks who follow the Proving Grounds podcast probably curious about. So give us a little overview of that study we did a few years back on a putter with more and less offset, and what we saw, and maybe some of the kinetics reasons for the findings there.
Yeah, so the offset is a really interesting one where the first study at Ping was done mostly with iPing, and I use a motion capture camera, so I get a little bit different data, some a little bit, we'd say even extra data, yep, in terms of what's happening at setup. And with the iPing data, it was pretty clear that if you play with more offset, you are more likely to start the ball to the left. You're right-handed. Part of your start line, your facing impact, everything's going to be a little bit left bias. And the question was, okay, well, this is showing up in eye ping. Is it something that's happening in the stroke? That would be my flinch. What was interesting is that when I, you know, repeated the study in my lab, I saw the same thing. It was actually, and I will add, you deliver more loft and you start the putt more left. But what's interesting is that those biases are preset at address. Mm. And it's not something that the golfer is obviously conscious of. So when I run tests, I'll have participant number one will come in and they will hit five putts with a putter that has offset. And then they'll hit five putts with no offset and they'll go back and forth in these blocks. Participant number two will start with a different condition first and they alternate throughout the participant. So we try to remove biases. We try to have a nice balanced study design. And this effect shows up, but it's actually unlike the toe hang versus face balance, which is a thing that happens during the stroke and interacts with the kinetics. The offset is more of a visual thing that the player tends to adjust to at address, and then it stays in the stroke, which is very interesting. That seems to be the dominant effect.
Sasha, I've got a dumb question that I figured you'd be a perfect person to ask. Why is it that, and I don't do this anymore because it just doesn't work for me in my putting. Why is it that when I put a line on my ball, I line the ball up perfectly where I think the break's going to be and all that. When I stand over the ball with the putter, why does it at times not feel like it's directed where it should be directed? Because I've talked about this with a lot of my buddies, especially my good playing buddies, and you know, it's a real debate. Do you use the line? Do you not use the line? Why is that something that happens to us golfers when you get over the putt and you feel like the line's not accurate?
Well, the reason is how we've evolved to use vision. And when our eyes are over the ball and we're looking down at a line, to sum it up, it is not a great way to line something up. With your eyes.
Yeah.
Exactly. No one would ever shoot a gun. Point being, holding the gun below them, the way you have your line on the ball and be like, right. I've definitely snipers aren't like, picture me that you'd be, yeah, you have very limited ability. That's the short answer. Why is that? We have not evolved to try and, we're chasing down prey or trying to, things over time, get away from something, we want to be behind it, lining it up, whether we're throwing a projectile or lining up a gun, without getting into the reasons behind how our vision works.
Yeah. So trust, it's trust the line you put on the ball when you set it down. Don't trust in theory your eyes that are seeing something that's not accurate. Or it's like you said, your vision is telling you something different.
Right. And I think you can, if you work hard and have some trust, you can calibrate yourself to believe that that is straight. That's one thing that our vision is potentially good at is we can adapt. Our vision will start to adjust. It's also sometimes, your alignment can drift over time as well because, you can get these biases can work in. And that's why we end up, having alignment rods to prevent that bias from drifting in. So you can recalibrate. So, if you work hard enough at a chain, I think you can start to make that line on the ball look right as you're standing over it.
Marty, this came up so much with the Jordan Spieth phenomenon early in his career when he would, look at the hole, right? And it was Steph Curry's not, he's looking at the basket, right? He's not looking in theory at the ball. And I feel like that was a debate. And of course, I know Jordan's bounced back and forth with that, but you're thinking that 6-foot circle, right? 5-foot circle, scoring circle, and almost Jordan's theory or, what he used to win golf tournaments was such a different idea, yet it was something that works in almost every other sport or every other, athletic feat out there, right?
Sasha's done a little bit of research on this. Sasha, I heard, I don't know if it's true, but over half your town putts heads up putting up there. But tell us about your research in heads up putting, your kind of academic findings behind it, and where you stand currently on this technique, heads up putting versus not.
Do you putt heads up, Sasha?
I absolutely putt heads up.
Okay.
And it feels so wrong to putt heads down now. I have a million anecdotes and thoughts on this. But let me start with a stat that 80% of the golfers that come through my lab end up putting meaningfully better heads up. And these are golfers, you know, they could have been playing golf for 30 years. They could be scratch handicaps and they think I'm crazy to even have them attempt this. So what's the motivation? I've done three really solid studies looking at heads up putting. Now, what was the motivation for that? Well, it comes from, as Marty would say, first principles. It's like, well, what matters? What can I do to sink more putts? What are we under the control of? Putter head speed variability is massive, right? So what can we do to improve our speed control? And what are currently people doing that are really hindering that? So if anybody who's listening to this, ball up a piece of paper, grab a pen, a set of keys, whatever you got on the desk, find the garbage can and go, okay, I'm going to fire something in the garbage can over here, but then look down. And there's been research that has shown outside of golf, but as soon as you stop looking at a target, our memory of how far that target is begins to exponentially decay.
Mm.
So that's why even if you see some of the best golfers, like Aaron Baddeley, when he hits a putt, I remember trying to film him at Whisper Rock once. I was just on the side of the green, you know, kind of covertly filming. And I missed the first two attempts because he starts his stroke as his head's coming back to the ball.
Yeah.
So he's minimizing that decay time. Now, some golfers probably have a really good ability to do that. Vast majority of us do not. So in the research, I would look at not just the number of putts that were made, but I looked at, okay, when you're putting heads up versus head down, what happens to your variability and impact spot, path, face angle, and speed? And what you see is a reduction in speed control variability, a little bit of increase in impact spot variability, but that doesn't matter. It gets completely washed out by speed control going up. And, you know, there's lots of clues in other sports. A hockey player, where there's way more going on, you know, in terms of the pucks moving around on the blade.
Yeah.
90% of the things they do when they're shooting, passing, their head is up. Basketball shooting, you would never look down. And some people say with shooting a basketball, yeah, but that's because I'm holding the ball, you know. I'm not trying to impact it. But then you look at billiards. The best billiards players, they don't look at the cue ball. They look at where they want the cue ball to go. Mm. And that's, you know, so you have two targets in golf. You're trying to hit the golf ball, but you're also trying to project it to a second target. And everybody should really try heads up putting. And so quickly, if I was going to give somebody, you know, okay, what do I do to heads up putt? Your routine doesn't change. Everything's exactly the same. And both of you caddied. So if I was like asking a caddy, hey, you know, where should I start this putt? You'd be like, cup outside left. And universally, that is understood that is your start line, right? That is the line I want to start the ball on. So what I say is, okay, nothing changes your routine. Get up over the ball. When you bring your head down for the final time, you don't start your stroke. Then you look, you imagine a laser line coming out of that putter face and you just follow it to the hole. And where that laser line would pass closest to the hole, that's what you stare at and you think, I'm just going to roll the ball over that spot. Mm. That's how you heads up putt. So, you know, if you think, okay, this is 8 foot of right edge, stare at the right edge and go, I'm going to roll this putt over the right edge. And people putt better. And then even starting to look at things like head movement. So head movement, it's called allocentric head movement. So the best putters tend to move their head like in the opposite direction to the putter. And it's small movements, but still that's correlated with better putting. There's a motor control researcher from Canada named Timothy Lee that's showing that. You putt heads up, you tend to have, you're more in line with that style of head movement. And the magnitude of your head movement is also smaller. So two things, your head moves less, the movement it does have is more in line with the better putter. And there's all sorts of other cool things that, you know, for people that struggle with putting, it takes your mind off of mechanical thoughts. Mm-hmm. Becomes more of a feel. You're less concerned about what exactly the putter's doing.
Sasha, I did it for 6 months a few years back. The thing I noticed the most with it was I would hit the 5-6 foot putts, right, kind of the scoring putts. I felt like I hit them with a lot of speed. Like I hit them and I made them with a lot of speed versus, to your point, if you're standing over the putt, you're looking down at it, you know, it's a quick putt or it's moving away from me. I'm a left-handed putter. Maybe it's moving to my left and you're kind of trying to drip it on the right side. I noticed that when I was putting well face up, I was hitting those putts in the hole and they were going in with like serious make speed, the kind of make speed that you want to hit putts with in the first place.
Nice. 1.74 miles per hour.
Is that the perfect make speed?
Yeah.
The question on this is, would an alternative be to do something a little bit more, let's say not comfortable going 100% heads up. Would a more Aaron Baddeley approach where you try to reduce that time? I feel like I've done good with that in terms of my routine. Would that be a viable kind of alternative, maybe next best?
Absolutely. Yep. If you're not comfortable with the heads up, then that's the way to go, is that, okay, I've decided, you know, this is the putt I want to execute, heads down, way you go.
Gotcha. Yep. Gotcha.
Are you putting every putt heads up, Sasha? Are you doing, 30 footers, 40 footers, everything like that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
It gets very different when you are executing a pitch shot or a chip shot, because right. then impact spot becomes very, a lot more important. And your lies change a lot. Your stance changes a lot. On a putting green, the ball is never stopping anywhere that has more than a 4% slope.
Yeah.
4% is probably even getting extreme. So your setup is always the same. The ball's always in the same spot. Your feet are always, feeling the same weight distribution. And it's interesting to me that we're looking down, but that information is always the same on every putt. The information from the putt to the hole is what we want to react to. You know, that's the information. And that's why most of our practice strokes are taken looking up. We're trying to get a sense for what that is. And then we look down. So when I putt heads down now, it feels the same as everybody that's listening. When you go to throw something in the garbage can, you look down. That's what it feels like to me,
Yeah.
I was just talking to P and Lim from Vision 54, and they said Annika tried it a long time ago, and she made 84 in a row from 12 feet.
Whoa.
And they said, so are you going to, take this to the course? She's like, no, everybody's going to be looking at me funny. Yeah. So she didn't, but it's like, wow, that's a lot of putts in a row before, got some confidence.
Marty, you know what I'm doing after this podcast?
Oh, I know exactly what you're doing.
And I'm going to be spending like the next hour and a half just face up putting every putt I've got on the putting green. It's happening.
Yeah.
Sasha, what about the topic of uphillers versus downhillers? What would you rather have? Downhill 8-footer versus uphill 8-footer. What are some of the considerations there? Maybe talk a little bit about some of exploring that, both theoretically and then maybe with some measured empirical data.
Yeah, so I've got two fantastic data sets to look at this. So. When I do putter testing, so actually with, I did a combined heads up versus heads down and, toe hang versus face balance study. It was over 2 days. Golfers hit 96 putt sheets, various combinations of conditions. And two of the holes were a straight uphill 8-footer and a straight downhill 8-footer. And everything was, using motion capture. So we would make sure the green is perfectly calibrated. We hit the ball, we track the ball. And we'd adjust the green to make sure that these two putts, the 8-foot uphill and 8-foot downhill, are absolutely dead straight. No question, significantly more putts were made on the 8-foot downhiller compared to the 8-foot uphiller. Wasn't close. Meaningful difference in percentage of make putts. Then, fast forward to now, with stack putting, where we have, I think we're probably getting close to a million putts. And we can look at, okay, we're telling people to go hit a straight uphill 8-footer, a straight downhill 8-footer, and it's reversed.
Mm.
Uphill putts are easier than downhill putts. You're more likely to make an uphill putt in reality. And there's a subtle difference here. In the lab, I've got a dot on the green saying this is where you're going to hit your putt from, and you're hitting it to this hole, and you know that it is dead downhill. You know that it is perfectly uphill. Okay. Yep. Whereas in stack putting and in reality on the golf course, you go, I think this is straight uphill, or I think this is straight downhill. And that's the subtle difference. If you go, okay, this is uphill, you have to hit this a little firmer. So it's traveling for less time. You're going to be more aggressive with it. And there's a chance that it's not perfectly uphill. Okay. So that versus downhill, again, you don't really know if this is exactly downhill. And you also have to hit it with a little bit less speed. So that takes a little more of the variability in the green is going to come into it, the ball kind of meandering left or right. So it's interesting to see how those two things flip. In practice, give me the uphill 8-footer.
What would you rather have to win your club championship, a 6-footer straight uphill or a 6-foot slider downhill left to right? And why? And why?
They're both the same distance, 6 feet?
Yeah, 6 feet.
Give me the straight uphill putt, just based on all of that data. You know, people are making more uphill putts. Yeah.
Quick to answer that one. It's like, oh, yeah. I'll take the one I can maybe let go a little bit more.
Now, if someone told me, now that's interesting. If someone told me, also knowing what I know, they said, this is 100% straight down the hill. Then I'd take the downhill putt.
What if it's a slider? Downhill left or right?
Yeah, no, I'm avoiding the slider.
Okay.
I'm avoiding the slider. Unless it's at least 2 feet closer. If it's closer, I'm taking the slider. Distance is still king. I'm taking the 5-foot slider over the 7-foot that I think is straight uphill.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fun insight in putting is, just being closer to the hole, it means everything, right, Sasha?
Absolutely.
That's been proven throughout the bag, right? I mean, that was the whole kind of flip in the way even professional golf was 25 years ago versus now, where I'll tell you this, Marty, playing in the amateur this past year and playing those practice rounds with the players and diving into the data there and how they go about their business, it's simply – it's driver here because this data tells us it's driver, right? And rarely are you seeing those level of players hitting anything less than driver off a tee unless it just tightens up there. I mean, it is send it all day, every day. And I mean, same thing in terms of putting. It sounds like Sasha was, it's as long as you're closer, no matter how much movement's involved, take the closer putt.
Yeah. And the more important point there is that you do not have enough control to guarantee if you're guaranteeing the uphill putt, then you're also guaranteeing it's going to be further away. You know?
Yeah.
Hey, why do we not see more pros do face up? I mean, I know the Annika story and we talked about Jordan Spieth, but why does it, like, it seems like someone would take this on. And the fact that we haven't really seen a single modern player kind of subscribe to what you're saying, you've got half a town doing, you know, kind of following along with your data and your philosophies. Why is this not kind of bled into the pro game?
Yeah, I think the Annika reason is the number one reason.
Embarrassment is really a thing.
Yeah, it would take someone with the open-mindedness of Fitzpatrick, you know, so Fitzpatrick's a good example of, hey, I'm going to do this cross-handed drill with my, you know, pitching.
Yeah.
To kind of, you know, help get a feel of my swing, and because he tracks everything, he's like, "Huh. This is pretty good. Done. It's in play." Now, he's a great putter, so he has absolutely no reason to really switch. But it would take someone who both performed better heads up to actually go and try it, and then also to have that open-mindedness of like, hey, I'm going to go full throttle with this. And to a certain extent, that's kind of Spieth. You know, he did that a bit. But if I was to give a practical reason, you know, to play devil's advocate, is that, you know, I don't want to give tour players an out here, but there could be a little bit more movement on the green, you know? So when I putt heads up, there'll be a lot of people who, when they see you start your stroke, they'll like move to go to their ball. Yep. As you're starting their stroke. And if it's constant movement, so maybe it's fine on tour. There was constant bustling around, you know, like if you're like shooting basketball, it's just, you know, it's like fine. But if it's like perfect stillness and then something moves, you know, then that could throw you off a little bit. And I noticed that with my own heads up putting, but most people aren't moving around that much. It's usually just, and I'll say to them, hey, you know, just kind of be still just till I hit the ball. That's to give tour players an out. But I really think the number one reason is just it's almost like admitting that their putting is so bad or something that, you know, that they've got to go to this extreme technique.
Yeah.
But I think it's worth trying, especially for folks who are struggling. You know, the strokes gain's not that great. It can't hurt to test it out.
Well, I mean, you think about some of the stats that Scotty was producing in 2023, I mean, with the ball striking, and just to throw anything out there. I mean, Marty, I say this all the time. I'm very impressed with the professional golfer's ability to tinker. I mean, yeah. Sasho's point about, you know, Matt Fitzpatrick and chipping crosshand, that I heard a story years ago that Fred Couples was talked about how he was a better one-handed chipper
yep.
than he was with both hands on the golf club, but he just didn't want to put it out there because he didn't want people in the crowds and galleries to talk about it. But there is, it feels like the tinkering almost stops on the greens, right? I mean, you might go long putter, you might go with green readings books, you might go with a different grip, but in terms of just the analytics in terms of what could happen on the greens, it feels like it almost stops there.
Yeah, one of our best senior players in the section here, he chips one-handed, puts his left hand in his pocket, and boom, and he chips amazing.
In his pocket?
Yes, he puts it in the pocket.
Unbelievable.
Next level.
Well, you know, it's interesting because most of the precision things we do in other sports, they're all done with one hand. You'd never throw darts with two hands.
Yeah.
You know, you imagine, you know, we write with a single hand, everything with, you know, with badminton because it's a little bit lighter. Always a single hand, you know, most of tennis, unless strength becomes an issue, is a single hand. So it seems reasonable, but people struggle with trying to do it, you know, like, I think I'm doing something funny.
I just saw a video of some college team, football team, where the center did a two-handed snap and the whole internet was going crazy over that, you know. It's kind of the opposite
right.
example.
Yeah, it's like a long snapper, but doing it for your quarterback,
exactly.
Right? I mean, it's only weird until it works, and then it's not weird anymore.
Yeah. Sasha, what about head weight? What have you found in putting, head weight? I mean, we've seen, again, pretty reliable folks with a faster tempo, backswing to forward stroke time ratio, generally do better with a lighter head weight putter. Slower tempos generally with a heavier headweight putter. What are your findings there on putter headweight and performance?
Yeah, I mean, and that's another one that's lined up very closely in my lab
yeah.
with what Ping's been doing. And I think that is also getting at the kinetics. Those faster tempos are indicative of higher, the force is changing at a higher rate and your preference for what you want your stroke to do. And it's nice to have the implement that you're using kind of match that. So, and this is a good example of something that it can be tough to exactly tease out the why, and you're kind of left with a hypothesis, but it's more important to have good experimental data in the end than a good theoretical reason.
Yeah.
You know, it's really nice if you can figure out the theory, and that's probably going to help you to design better clubs. But in the end, it's better to have the data. You know, to have the experimental data that says this works better for this type of player.
Yeah, my thought on that, Sasha, is that if it has a lot to do, and even the, as you mentioned, with the stroke type, it has a lot to do with the backstroke. You know, what happens right when you try to start, you know, accelerating the object or accelerating the putter. If you do it very quickly and the putter's too heavy, it doesn't, you know, it's not moving at the rate that I think your brain and your nervous system might want it to. What are your thoughts on that is kind of like a, you know, a theory or a way to think about it?
Yeah, I like that. Absolutely. It's very much in tune with what I would call perception-action coupling. You know, what you're doing and the feedback you're getting from what's actually happening. You want those two things to line up.
Gotcha. Yeah.
What is the text messages like between you guys? I mean, is it like, is it this advanced? I mean, do you dive this deep on the back and forth, or do you guys just shoot the, you know what, every now and again?
Marty and I are 99% all business in terms of like hardcore science. Like,
I want to dive into the text exchanges and see if it looks like this.
It's all about perception action coupling.
Yeah.
New t-shirts we're going to have to make. Sasha, for you putting, when you're diving into all this data and you're going over thousands and thousands of, tests and everything you do, how do you simplify it in your own brain when you go play golf?
Oh, it's all feel okay. For me. You know, you think about it, you understand it, but then you're on your putting green. It's just reacting, you know, like, and I think that's why it can be so tough to teach some of these things like green reading, especially when you're trying to factor in all of these variables, like if you have a perfectly rectangular green with a set slope and the stimp doesn't change from the ball to the hole, you know that you got some, you can make some serious headway with aim point. Great. But if you start to have, you know, putts flattening out towards the end, you know, you're like, all right, it's left to right, but then it straightens out. All of a sudden it's like, okay, yeah, you know, aim point can help. But then if you go, okay, but then I got some stimp, there's also a bit of dew, you know, there's a bit of wind. I think that's where it's, you know, it really, I like heads up putting because you take all of that information in and you just react to it with your stroke, you know? And I think that's where some of the best putters, like a Baddeley, when you ask, okay, where exactly are you aiming here? And he's like, well, like over there, you know, like, like, is it here? You know, you put a tee down, he's like, well, I don't know. It's over there because his subconscious has a very specific thing it's executing, but it's like taking in all this information. So, you know, I often think that some savant will come along like Rain Man. You've ever seen Rain Man, you know, where the toothpicks get knocked off the table and he's like, oh, there's 274 toothpicks. And literally there's going to be somebody who has this skill set that's pretty decent at all the other aspects of golf. But what, you know, the three of us might consider a green irregularity, you know, like, oh, we've put our level down on the green. We know how long the putt is. We know what should happen here. And we set up our perfect putter and we roll the ball and it ends up short, you know, or it kind of stays out straight. Oh, because we didn't see, you know, there was a little wormhole or some ant or a leaf or a bump in the green. But that's really just green reading. You know, so Rain Man comes up there and he's like, oh, yeah, all that information goes in and it comes out in the execution of his stroke, you know, and all of a sudden, instead of in the lab going from 90% 8-footers down to 50%, he's at like 75% and just like leaves everybody in his dust.
Sasha, to me, that's watching Tiger's putt, last putt on 18 at Torrey Pines. I mean, watching the worm cam of that. I mean, I don't know if that's luck or if he was Rain Man and he figured that out.
Well, and he's done it over so many times. Does he be like Bay Hill? Like how many of those? Yes. Those are not easy putts on greens that have been trampled on back in the day with metal spikes. Yep. You know what? I'm with you. Like, and he's so late. He was so late. He still is laser focused. He'd see a, I guess he did putt that one in the hero into the bunker. So he could have used a bit more focus then, but
he's rusty.
You know, he just, you could see he was like surveying every square inch of that putt. And, you know, maybe subconsciously that was going in there, you know?
Yeah.
Don't know.
Maybe the closest we have seen to this point in terms of what Sasha thinks will be coming eventually in pro golf. Sasha, we have really appreciated the time. Very fascinating. We've had a lot of guests on this podcast. I think you might be atop the list of people I want to play golf with now, because I just,
sweet.
And I want to ride in the cart with you because I just want to I just want to hear you talk about this over and over again. And like I said, the moment we're done recording, I'm going straight to the putting green because I am, I'm 2024 is going to be heads up putting for me.
You know, I don't know if it's appropriate to plug Stack Putting. You're not even doing this, but you get on Stack Putting and tag your sessions.
Yeah.
You know, like this isn't a plug. This is why Marty and I built it into Stack Putting. Yeah. So it's like, hey, you have this question, go test it out. Do a few sessions heads up, few sessions heads up. My 12-year-old, we were prototyping, you know, like debugging the app. I was like, okay, I need somebody to put in a variable to decide, you know, if our statistical comparison's working. I was like, well, I don't have another putter in here. I'm like, just this week, do a session heads up, do a session heads down. And he gained 3 strokes putting heads up. And I didn't, you know, I wasn't going to push him. He's like, well, I got to putt heads up. You know, he's analytical like me. I'm like, I can't argue with that. You should, yeah. There is the data.
The numbers are telling you this. Sasha, thanks so much for the time, man. This has been great. Marty's smiling. I'm smiling. We're fired up about the putting conversation. It's been really good. This is the Ping Proving Grounds podcast.